Hello, 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 everyone. It is Friday afternoon if you're joining us live, which means it's time for another kick-ass career conversation. I am Kim.
I'm Louise.
And we are joined by?
I'm Hannah.
Hannah. We're so excited that you're here, Hannah. And we're going to share with the world a little bit more about you in just a little bit. But we want to start this week like we start every week. What are we celebrating? I know, and Louise always laughs because she loves this question.
I am celebrating this thing that starts from here. I think people call it your voice and where we use it as opposed to staying silent and, right? It's not even biting your tongue, I think. Oftentimes I get stuck in this place where I just clearly don't use my voice. I am using it more, and I'm celebrating my voice this week. Later today, I'm actually really going to be using my voice at a little improv session that I've joined. And so I've talked before on the podcast about improv and how what a wonderful tool it is to not just practice using your voice, but getting out of your own frickin' way and getting out of your head and into your body and trusting your intuition. And so I'm really looking forward to that. It's always been a blast. And I'm celebrating all of those folks this week that I've talked to that are finding their voice and figuring out how to use it for themselves and their causes as well. So that's me. How about you, Hannah? What are you celebrating?
Well, I have had two of my very best friends in the world have babies in the last month. So I have been like inundated with baby snuggles for the last 30 days, and I'm celebrating that. So my sweet little goddaughter, Mary Alice and Livy Rose. So I'm celebrating them today.
Yes,
they're so cute. Oh my goodness.
Baby snuggles.
I know, it's the very best. I have a 2-year-old, and so she's not into snuggling so much anymore. So,
well, neither is my 18-year-old that backs away when I come with my arms open looking.
Right, right.
I'm blessed. My 14-year-old, she still loves her snuggles. So
I pray that my daughter will find her way back.
Yeah, I pray that too.
Yeah.
I am celebrating. Oh, there's so much to celebrate. There's so much to celebrate right now. I think what I am celebrating most, though, is friendship. Friendship that comes when you least expect it and from almost like really surprising places. And the things that you share in friendship that you don't always... You just don't always expect. I guess I'm celebrating unexpected friendships. I've just had a few of those pop up in my life recently. And it's like, wow, you know, people that you know that you kind of talk to every now and then. And then all of a sudden you're just sharing the juiciest, deepest details of your lives or their lives. And you're able to be there. It's a form of support in a different way than you ever expected you would be. So I'm celebrating that because it's a really cool feeling.
It is.
Yeah. So, Hannah, let's let the world know a little bit about who you are. We're so glad that you're here in this conversation today. So, Hannah is a chemical engineer by trade and worked her way up to management positions in the pulp and paper industry. Mm-hmm. Before she quit, she was leading a team of 120 employees and managing billions of dollars of equipment and raw materials. She quit her job when she had her daughter, which we learned was 2 years ago, and started pursuing a master's in industrial and organizational psychology. She started Climbing Trees Consulting, her business, in June of 2023 with the sole purpose of supporting and coaching female engineers navigating male-dominated industries. Mm-hmm. Hannah, like I said, we are just so excited that you are here to have this conversation.
There's going to be some juicy bits that come out of this conversation. I came from transportation and logistics, right? Okay. Also that male dominated space where there's all kinds of things we're going to get into. I want to know, I'm going to change it up a little bit this week. I want to know, Hannah, what was your very first like adult job? What would you consider your very first job?
Well, when I was in high school, I worked at an ice cream shop, but past that, and I did work at a Mellow Mushroom for a while too, but my first like real adult job where I was like actually bringing home some money. I started co-oping at a paper company when I was in college. So I worked there for 3 semesters on and off for my junior and senior year. So that was my real first job. And I remember vividly showing up on the paper machine floor on my very first day, just being like, what have I gotten myself into? And then had no idea that I would end up being in that industry for the next 10 years, but it was overwhelming for sure.
So yeah. that wasn't something that you imagined you'd be in, like that wasn't an industry you ever dreamed of?
No, not at all. I mean, I live in the South. So, I mean, we would pass paper mills on the way to the beach every single summer. And really, it was more just like, oh, my God, what is that smell? Like, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, no thoughts beyond that. And then I was about to enter my first semester of my junior year, and I was in summer school, and I was like, I have to get an internship or get a job, take a break off from college for a little bit. I was just feeling really like burned out by it all. And I, you know, walked into the co-op office, asked them what they had. Somehow this company like had a changeover in HR personnel and hadn't hired any co-ops for the fall. So, I mean, I walked into the co-op office and I started at the paper mill about 2 weeks later, I think. So it was very just like by kind of on a whim decided to start working there. So yeah, I did not foresee that for myself at all.
What would you have foreseen if you were back there? If there was a different job at the co-op office, what would you have hoped it would be?
I kind of saw myself in like a research kind of role and even potentially like going into medical school after college. I was interested in kind of like biomedical engineering, but really I think the two co-op positions that were open were like carpet manufacturing or pulp and paper. And I happened to have family in the pulp and paper town that I could live with. So it all kind of serendipitously worked out. But yeah, that was kind of what I was interested in, was like medical research, biomedical engineering and stuff like that.
That is quite a difference.
Very much so.
Yeah. Yes. I worked on the floor, actually in inventory control in a paper company where we made phone books.
Okay.
Like back in the day where like everybody had a phone book.
Yeah.
And talk about being somewhere that you didn't expect to be. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was a theater major. Really didn't expect
180.
Yeah. So being there, being in this place where you didn't expect to be, you mm-hmm. had family, so that was good, yeah. Right?
Yes.
What helped you kind of transition yourself into this new role, into this new space?
Yeah, I think this is where like being a young female in a space like this actually played to my advantage, which was a lot of the older managers and the guys who kind of come up through the ranks in the paper mills, like for some reason, just took me under their wing and would show me everything that I wanted to know and would kind of dragged me in and joked with me and like kind of infiltrated me into the mill culture and like taught me what was normal and stuff. And I think without them, I would have felt very, very lost. And I will say, like, I can remember the first month of being there, like, scared to leave my office, you know, like steel-toe boots, hard hats, safety glasses, earplugs, unsure of where I'm at in this enormous, you know, 1200 person facility. And I just remember one of them coming down to my office one day in the middle of an outage, like busiest day of the month. And he's just like, you're coming with me today. And like, from that moment on, I just remember him walking faster than any person had ever met. And that I ever met had walked, and he would turn around and look at me and like, just hurry up, like mm-hmm. you better keep up with me, you know? And I was like, this is okay. I'm in, like, I'll go wherever he goes. I'll learn whatever he has to show me. And then, you know, from there I started feeling more comfortable, like, you know, getting the insight from an operator, or like hanging out in the control room for a little while, like meeting different people on the floor, like, you know, seeing how different supervisors manage their crews and stuff like that. And then over time, I found myself like, once that semester was over, like, I did not want to leave at all. So yeah, but I felt very blessed that they would, you know, take me under their wing like that when it was painfully obvious that I had no business being there. really.
Did you feel like you needed to change anything about who you were to kind of fit under their wing or to fit in?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that there, it's a male culture. I think like in order to kind of find your way in that, I think you have to be willing to talk about football and fishing and like grilling out and stuff like that I would typically have no interest in ever talking about. So I think like in order to start the process of building relationships with people, you often kind of have to compromise as far as like what your interests in the conversation are. Because, you know, from my perspective, I'm there for 4 months. It's no skin off their back if they never get to know me. But it is important for me if I don't get to know the knowledge that they have. So, you know, in that way, I had to definitely like just assimilate into kind of what their interests were and what they were talking about in the control room and pretend to be interested in all of that stuff. And I don't regret that at all because I built incredible relationships with them. And then when I went back to work there full time and those guys, actually, a lot of them were on my crew when I came back full time. And like, I already had established relationships with some of them. And that, you know, set me, you know, just a few months ahead of everybody that was in my position because I'd already, you know, built the groundwork for those relationships. So that was really helpful.
So I'm hearing relationships are key, right? So this topic that we're talking about, engineering resilience, I mean, yes, play on words engineering because of your background. And the reality is the resilience, it sounds like, is coming from this place of being open. So being allowing yourself to just be open to what is happening, who is bringing you in, who's having those conversations, what those conversations sound like, all with the end result of, I want to be here to learn.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I think just like being willing to sit in like the awkwardness of like, yeah, I get that I'm the odd one out in this room. No one on this paper machine looks like me. And that feels uncomfortable. And I think I shied away from that discomfort for a long time. But ultimately, to be successful in my career, I had to be okay being the only one that looked like me. You know, that was really the only path. So the faster that I figured out that like, okay, awkwardness is fine, discomfort is something that I can live with, the easier I was able to build those relationships for sure.
Louise, yeah, did you experience that?
Well, yes. And I came into a male-dominated industry much later in my career journey as well. And so there was this space where it was like, you know, I did feel this proving energy, but also a very, like, it got very crunchy because it's like, I don't feel like I should have to prove myself. I feel like I've already done that. I was, I was 25 years into my career when I pivoted into a male dominated industry and then very much felt like I needed to prove myself in a much different way than I had been used to. I already did all of that stuff, right? How come I have to be doing it again? But it's that energy, I think, right? Like, you know, Hannah, when you're talking about it, it's like, well, what can I learn? How can I put this into my, my toolbox? What are those things that I need to be a great leader? And it sounds like you were able to do that because you did elevate yourself in that industry quite successfully.
Yeah. And I also definitely relate to what you're saying though, of like, why am I having to prove myself from when I was the assistant department manager. And then, you know, after being in that role for 3 years, it was later in my career, getting the department manager position. And, but still people who loved working with me and had worked with me for a long time were like, why is she getting this job? You know? And I'm like, I've done the work to prove myself. Why am I having to do this all over again to you? You know, but here we go. I'll show you, you know, kind of like a challenge accepted. Definitely relate to that.
This idea of proving energy is always, this is a big topic for my clients, for myself, right? I mean, I came up through law and nonprofit, the entertainment industry, three very different industries and very much the same. Definitely felt the push to prove. And yet for me, I showed up in this space of saying, I don't need to prove anything. I refuse to prove anything. I've spent my life overcompensating, overpreparing, overing.
Yeah.
So why do I need to continue doing that? And getting to a place where I just refuse to do it. And trusting that they would see what they need to see over time, but that I wasn't going to go out of my way to say that I deserve to be somewhere, because I got really tired of that really, really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of power in that, and just being like, you've got what you've got. Like, you know, I'm going to show up every single day and like watch, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's like, I think that's what you're talking about, Kim, is resilience. Is like, when you're empowered and you own like what you know and where you came from and all the things in your toolbox, and you are like, you're in it. That really is resilience, because it's a different energy. For me, I did not have that. I had all the tools in my toolbox. I didn't use any single one of them. Right. And I got, I'm stuttering because it's like, I don't know if I want to say like I got beaten down, but I definitely felt beat up every single day, because I didn't have, or I didn't know how to use those things in my toolbox so that I could step into my power and own what I did. I let that organization and those people there tell me who I was instead of me saying who I was.
Yeah. I mean, for me, coming out of the practice of law, I was done with it. I was done having people tell me who I was. And that's not to say that I didn't overcompensate and overperform still. There were absolutely those times. But like you said, it's understanding that we have the toolboxes. And I think this is what we all do in our businesses with our clients now, is that we help them understand that they do actively have a toolbox that can be used. They don't have to wait to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of it's like building the skills in the toolbox, at least for my clients. It's like, yeah, they are living in this spiral of having to prove themselves constantly and not knowing, not having the words to do it, not really knowing what their value is to a company. So a lot of it's like, okay, how do we get into a one-to-one or a meeting and like set you up so that you don't leave feeling disappointed every single time in yourself for not saying what you wanted to say and not standing up for yourself the way you know you deserve to be stood up for. So yeah, definitely.
Oh, going back to that voice, right? That throat chakra that Louise was talking about. Oh, 100%. So what are some of our favorite, and I'd love to hear from both of you, what are some of our favorite like tips and techniques that maybe exist in these toolboxes that we're working with our clients that we want to share with our listeners?
Some of the ones that I work with my clients is, number one, kind of challenging this idea that you have to be like at a certain level of success or at a certain age to find your voice and find confidence, and portraying confidence as more of a skill, like just like learning math or just like learning reading and writing. Like it's a skill that you can build and that you can practice. And, you know, it's kind of, I hate the term like fake it till you make it, but you can continually practice something like confidence and then eventually one day actually feel confident. So even just like the way you, you know, show up in your speech, instead of saying like, I don't know if this makes sense, but, or I'm not 100% sure. The more you take those kinds of qualifiers out of your speech, the more confident you will be in the way that you speak. So that's like a direct reflection of kind of like how you can practice confidence. And then I think like for me, a big one will always be number one on my list is like salary negotiations. Like how do you get paid equally or above market value for the job that you're doing? So I'm huge on that one. If it's not on the radar of the clients that I work with, I will spend half of, you know, our time together in one session, at least just giving them the basics of a salary negotiation. And I think the other big one for me is how to get what you need out of a one-to-one. I think, you know, we all probably all at some point in our careers heard like, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, and well, that's not helpful. I want a promotion. I want the next pay raise up. So tell me what path I have to take to get it. Don't just tell me to keep doing what I'm doing. That's not helpful at all. So kind of those are probably the three biggest skills that I try to help my clients with.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, high five on the salary negotiation.
Yeah, it's like near dear to my heart.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. So much time spent in nonprofit. It is a huge thing.
Yeah.
Louise, how about you?
Well, you know, Hannah, as you're talking about the kind of this fake it till you make it, I often have this like visual of learning to ride a bike. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we can get on a bike and we're practicing because we don't know how to do it, right? And we practice. And then all of a sudden, right, we get a couple of pedals in and we go and it actually looks like we're doing it. We know we're practicing, but somebody walking down the street will go, oh, look, right? Louise knows how to ride a bike. That's I don't because I'm practicing, but yeah. It doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of like, where can we practice? How can we be putting ourselves out there in a way, like in a very practice way? What am I learning about myself? What am I learning about the people around me when mm-hmm. I'm practicing confidence, right? Yeah. And then we get that data, right? We get that information. We can lean into that feeling of like, oh yeah, like I actually do know how to ride a bike after practicing and practicing and practicing. So I love that. So that's kind of that's the analogy I often see around confidence. Yeah. And you also said something, you know, when we talk about our salary negotiations and we talk about, right, even one-on-ones, that is really about understanding like what you want, like mm-hmm. your own values, your own, like who you are, and like really be owning like your personal brand, own your superpower, right? Like wear your cape. And be able to communicate and use your little voice box to say the words and be clear about what that is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that we all know that we need a promotion or that we all know what our next step is. But when we start to take the time to say, okay, what's the experience I want to bring closer to me? And now how do I communicate that to my leadership? Right? That becomes that key piece so that my leader now actually knows what I want. My leader is witness to my accomplishments because I'm having those one-on-one conversations where I'm actually saying, right, what I've done and what I want. And then those conversations become so much easier because everyone is on the same page. So those are kind of the two nuggets I have, but they really piggyback off of what you've said, Hannah.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with clients or even like just friends of mine who always say, well, yeah, they know I want the next promotion. I'm like,
did you say it?
Did they tell you that? Did you say it to them ever in those words?
Yeah.
Well, no, but that's the next obvious step for no, have a conversation. I promise you, they're not thinking about it. They are not thinking about it unless you say the words out loud.
No, because in fact, they're probably not even thinking about you. Like they
100%. I was going to say that.
Like we wish they were, but they're not. They're not themselves. Yeah. Or what, right? Their own shit that they're dealing with.
Yeah, they're thinking like, about their next promotion, not yours.
exactly. And so that goes to really where I help a lot of people focus in on is like, okay, let's actually take a look at reality. Mm-hmm. Right? Reality is they're not thinking about you. Reality is as much as we want them to, they're not thinking. But there's also the reality of, how did that person get that promotion? How did that person, get that grant? Did that organization get that grant? How did that individual, hit $1 million? Let's actually look at the facts of what got that person there. And do you know for a fact that you don't have the same or better skill set?
Yeah.
We can't ever answer that because we're not living that other person's life. Mm-hmm. And no matter what social media tells us, right? It's not real. There's mm-hmm. so very little that's real. And there also, right, when we go into the workplace, there's mm-hmm. so very little that's real. There's so very little that's transparent. And so we make up these stories of what we think that other person or that other entity or that other organization, that other leader has done. And yet we don't have that information. We don't know. And so stop comparing yourself to other people and other things and saying, right, it's not fair. When's my turn? When do I deserve it? Mm-hmm. Use your voice, speak your truth, go get what you want. It's not always easy.
Yeah.
But it can come with ease when we're very clear on what we want. And that part is the last part of it, right? It's like clarifying what we want.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Because that just because it's the next rung up the ladder doesn't mean that that's necessarily what's going to be mm-hmm. aligned for us.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So sure. Figuring that out. And I think that that all leads to, right, having all of these little pieces and parts in our toolbox is what mm-hmm. leads us to be more resilient and be able to weather the storm, particularly when we feel othered in an environment, being the only woman, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Feeling all of the ways that we're marginalized. It can be really, really scary to use our voices. Mm-hmm. So then I guess the last part that I'll share in terms of what's in your toolbox is, who are your allies?
Yeah.
Right? That gentleman who took you out on the floor, who are your allies? Mm-hmm. They exist. And if they don't exist, are you in the right space?
Yeah. Sometimes you have to get creative. They may not just appear one day. They may not come down to your office and grab you by the hand.
Yeah, you know? 100%. Yeah, because they may be introverted. They may be trying to figure out their own world. They may be doing their own thing. But imagine when you create that connection with them, what can happen?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and we're all talking about taking control of your own career, right? Yeah. Like we give, I say this all of the time. This is like one of the foundations of my business is like, we give our power away to the places where we work, to these machines that are organizations all the time. Because we say, oh, well, that's the next ladder. That's the next rung. That's the next thing. It's like, because it suits the organization. It's like, whoa, but what if it doesn't suit you? Right? It might, absolutely, 100%, but it might not. And so like, let's be in control of our own careers. Let's stop giving our power away to organizations or to these machines that just like, of course, they're going to put the best people in the roles that make sense to that organization.
Or
that
not.
That might be you, or maybe it's not. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's what we're all talking about is, right, mm-hmm. is being in control. But I want to know, Hannah, I'm really, really curious. So mm-hmm. what's with the pivot? Like, so you are still not at the paper mill, leading a big group of people. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Yeah. So I get asked this question all the time, but yeah, for a while I'd try to get kind of been trying to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. I didn't foresee myself trying to have a family while also in the pulp and paper industry, mainly because my husband was in it as well. And we were both working insane hours and always on call, everything like that. So, you know, and then, you know how life happens to you. It's kind of like the day I got my promotion into that role, like 2 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant when we had said, like, we're going to wait for a few years to have kids so I can get into this job and really do it. 2 weeks later, I was pregnant. So, you know, like the universe just kind of throws those funny things at you sometimes and you have to roll with it. So I quit after my maternity leave and I honestly wanted to take some time to just figure out what I wanted to do next, whether that was, you know, maybe try to go pivot into like the kind of biomedical engineering field. I wasn't really sure what that was going to look like. I am big on mental health and psychology and just love learning about that. So I enrolled in the industrial and organizational psychology program through Auburn to get my master's and was just kind of like, maybe I could go back and work with a consulting agency and go into these mill environments and kind of help them, you know, with their organizational development. And there was no one really doing what I wanted to do, which was specifically work with their females. And that was always kind of like a passion of mine because of my experience in those male dominated industries. I very much felt like everyone was always saying, you know, you need to find coaches, you need to find mentors. But at 28, I was the highest ranking female at the place. So where's the mentor for me? Like, I don't know. I don't see them. They're not just like magically appearing like in my circle. So who is supposed to support me through this? And so, you know, I started developing this business idea of going and working with these companies and trying to help them put plans in place to support and retain their female engineers. And then kind of the other piece of that was one-on-one coaching with the engineers, with the females, to kind of like boost their confidence, all these tools that we've been talking about, kind of teach them those things. Me leaving the industry and then just showing up back up one day and asking them to hire me to do this did not work, like full stop, did not get any clients that way. So I thought, well, I'll just like pivot and do individual coaching. I'll grow that business, get a lot of experience under my belt of doing individual coaching. You know, I mean, the delusion with which I started this business is like hilarious in hindsight. Like, of course they wouldn't have hired me. I had no experience, but I thought that they would. So anyways, I started doing that back in September. So really that's been the last, gosh, 5 or 6 months of my life so far, building that client base and building out like my coaching program itself. And then, you know, for my 2 to 5 year plan, I'd love to go back into those businesses and kind of take what I've learned now and help them implement those plans from a more educated place, I think.
Yeah. I did the same thing when I started my business, right? Because I was burnt out and I needed to leave that environment. So I was like, I'll just take some time and I'll just write, like, I don't know, I'll figure it out. And then mm-hmm. I figured it out. I found my way to coaching. And I'm like, oh, I'm a coach.
Where are my clients?
Where's my clients? Then I just said I was a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I relate deeply to that.
That whole like entrepreneurial journey, mm-hmm. I think, is so very interesting. And I talk to folks about that, right? Like, what's the plan? What's your pivot? Doesn't have to be like it's a dead stop and then we, right, dig a hard right. It's like sometimes it's like, where's the on ramp? Where's the off ramp? Right. We get into a clover leaf and then you're on the freeway a lot smoother than right.
Yes.
Breaking and taking a hard turn. So yes.
I just jumped off a cliff. So
you kind of redefine what your business is a million times. Like I've pivoted like my ideal client, like my niche, what I want. I mean, and that's fine. Like that's fine. I'm happy that I've done that and been on this crazy ride of entrepreneurship. Yeah.
Well, and it will change a million times more. I mean, that's the reality. When we look at any organization or corporation that's been around for some time, it's constantly changing, adapting, re-engineering itself, right? Refining itself. And that's part of resilience too. It's saying this either doesn't serve me or this isn't serving the market or this isn't serving my clients in the best way, you know, whatever it is. We're in that constant state of reimagining ourselves. And, you know, going back to this idea, I'm going to go a little bit woo just for a second. Going back to this place of showing up to these machines, these corporations, mm-hmm. for the last 300 years, we've been in an era that has been focused on building and supporting these systems and these corporations and these places, for quote unquote communal good. Mm-hmm. Now we know that it hasn't been created for communal good. And some of it has, but most of it has not. But we've done that, right? That's what we've been focused on. We're actually at the beginning of this next 300 year cycle, which is focused on the individual. Mm-hmm. And so as we're doing that, right, as we're talking about what do we want, this, for a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't know how to think about that. I know how to think about what everybody else wants and needs, or what my organization wants or needs, or even as a business owner, right? Thinking about what does my business need mm-hmm. is so intricately tied to who we are. And yet we take ourselves out of that equation all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's because this is all in our entire lifetimes. This is all we've known. We've known that collectively we've been focused on the corporation. That's what we've been focused on for mm-hmm. 300 years. And so this shift to, but what do I want as an individual is new. And what an exciting time to be an entrepreneur, to be thinking about not only helping ourselves through that, but helping our clients, whether they're individuals or corporations.
Yeah.
Like what does that person want? So I just thought it was relevant to what we were sharing.
Yeah. And in IO psychology, it's person, environment, fit. Like you, mm-hmm. and you're kind of one of your things as a psychologist in this field is to be analyzing like how do we change the environment to fit the person? But how do we, you also have to look at how are we, does the person fit the environment as well? Mm-hmm. And the answer is not always yes, just because you have a degree in that field, you know? And I think that that's sometimes a misconception. It's like, just because I'm a chemical engineer doesn't mean maybe I was designed to do biomedical research, like, you know? And so finding that person environment fit is really important as far as the organizations getting the results that they need out of the people, but also the people feeling, you know, satisfaction with their jobs as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then like, where do we fit, right? Yeah. In that, and taking that control, saying like, what do I really want? Cause a lot of times our education is also right. Like we know what we see. Right. Like Hannah, you talked about, right? Like, well, I saw the paper mills going to the beach every day, right? Like, so we do know what we see and we don't know what we don't know. And education is that way a lot too, is that it's like, oh, this is the education path that just seems to make the most sense because it's one of seven that I actually know exist. Right. And it's like, oh, but there's like all kinds of ways and things to do. And you get to pull in all kinds of things and create your own educational experience, right? So that you can be stepping into those spaces that you truly own. But we do follow a lot of these ladders and paths and career paths. It's, I think, a flaw of, right, of high school and colleges and universities where you say, okay, well, this is the career path that you take when you have this degree. And it's like, I call bullshit. Like, oh, you can 100%. still do whatever it is you want to do. Like, follow your heart, follow that instinct, feed yourself, and see where that goes, see what doors open up. But that's not going to happen if you're in your office, right?
Right.
Afraid to step out on the floor. Right. It's all part of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And also just this idea that what you're choosing for yourself right now doesn't mean that you're choosing that for the rest of your life. I think that nobody taught me that when I was 18 and I chose my college major. I thought, I choose chemical engineering, I will be a chemical engineer the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And just because I'm a coach today supporting female engineers doesn't mean that I won't be a, you know, Food Network chef in 10 years from now. Like, who knows? I'm just like I'm not willing to put myself in a box as far as like who I'm going to be in 5 minutes or 5 years from now. And like, I think that's a beautiful place to live, is just like the world is my oyster, kind of open to all the possibilities there are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it keeps us alive, mm-hmm. right? When we think about, when I look at generations that came before us, and even many people within my generation, it's like, I don't see that as living. Yeah. I want to be alive. I want to experience what life has to offer. And so I'm crafting and creating and engineering my life in the way that I get to actually experience life.
Literally. I'm with you.
Right? I love that. And so if anybody on Food Network is listening, Hannah would like to, in 10 years.
Please, I would in a heartbeat.
I'm right there with you. Actually, I want to go over to England and be on the
Great British
Bake Off. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They're so much more civil over there.
They are beautiful human beings to each other. It's something.
At least on that show, right?
I love them. They're amazing.
All right. Before we digress too much further, I noticed the time, and this conversation I could keep this up all day. We are going to places that are too, fun.
For sure.
Yeah. Hannah, what do you have going on in the world that you want to make sure that people know about, and where can they connect with you?
Yeah. So my website, Climbing Trees Consulting, has pretty much everything that I'm involved in, but I have a newsletter on Substack called Rooting for You. I talk about engineering, mental health, and motherhood primarily. And then I'm always posting on LinkedIn just silly thoughts or actionable tips for male-dominated industries or anything that I could possibly come up with in my brain that day. So you can follow me there. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. And she's been posting some amazing new headshots over on Instagram. So
I'm going to give all the credit to the photographer on this.
The pictures are of you, however, so you can take some. There we go. Louise, what do we have coming up in our world?
Well, I love it. You can always find Kim and I individually over on LinkedIn, but you can also find us collectively over on your kickasscareer.com. So please join us there. Come and take our, we have our superhero quiz that's still up there. So if you want to know what your superpower is and who you are in the world of work, whatever that means to you, pop on over to your kick-ass career and check that out. Also join us for events. Kim and I are doing some really great micro classes for macro results, 25 minutes of your time every other week. And our next one coming up is all on micro breaks and how that can be worked into your day and what kind of impact it has when you can step away from your screen for a few minutes. So join us then. We also, as always, are here live every Friday. And next week, we're going to be talking about facing the fear of the unknown and what that looks like when we can navigate uncertainty with a little more ease. So please join us then. Did I hit all the high notes, Kim?
I think you did. And you used one of my favorite words, ease. Thank you for that. Hannah, it has been absolute pleasure. I look forward to continuing to follow your business, your career, and seeing you on the Food Network.
Yes. Now I'll be there.
Absolutely.
It's been so fun. Thank you all so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Take care. Have a great one.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.